Chapter 61. The Special Operations Forces landed and regrouped behind the ore tailings that shielded their approach from the mine buildings. They quickly spread out in a loose battle formation and waited for the command to move in. The snipers established their positions around the mine, lying flat and watching for movement through their scopes. Hollis, with Dillinger at his side, crawled up to the summit of the tailings and cautiously peered over. The scene had the look of a graveyard. The ghost mine was an eerie stage for a battle, but the cold rain and barren mountainside seemed an appropriate backdrop for a killing ground. The dull gray sky fell and gave the decaying buildings the look of a place that didn't belong to any world. The firing had stopped. Two of the outer buildings were blazing fiercely, the smoke rolling into the low overcast. Hollis counted at least seven bodies littering the road on one side of the crushing mill.
"I hate to sound mundane," said Hollis, "but I don't like the look of it."
"No sign of life," agreed Dillinger, peering through a pair of small but powerful binoculars.
Hollis carefully studied the buildings for another 5 seconds and then spoke into his transmitter.
"All right, let's mind our step and move in."
"One moment, Colonel," a voice broke in.
"Hold the order," snapped Hollis.
"Sergeant Baker, sir, on the right flank. I have a group of 5 people approaching up the railroad track."
"They armed?"
"No, sir, they have their hands in the air."
"Very good. You and your men round them up. Watch for a trap. Major Dillinger and I are on our way."
Hollis and Dillinger snaked around the mine tailings until they found the railroad and began jogging along it toward the fjord. After about 70 meters, several human figures took form through the pouring rain. Sergeant Baker came forward to report.
"We have the hostages and 1 terrorist, Colonel."
"You've rescued the hostages?" Hollis exclaimed loudly. "All 4 of them?
"Yes, sir," replied Baker. "They're pretty well worn out, but otherwise they're in good shape."
"Nice work, Sergeant," said Hollis, pumping Baker's hand in undisguised exuberance.
Both officers had memorized the faces of the 2 presidents and the United Nations Secretary General during the flight from Virginia. They were already familiar with Senator Pitt's appearance from the news media. They hurried forward and were enveloped in a great surge of relief as they recognized all 4 of the missing VIPs. Much of their relief turned to surprise when they saw the terrorist prisoner was none other than Rudy Gunn. Senator Pitt stepped forward and shook Hollis's hand as Gunn made the introductions.
"Are we ever glad to see you, Colonel," said the senator, beaming.
"Sorry we're late," mumbled Hollis, still not sure what to make of it all.
Hala embraced him, as did Hassan and De Lorenzo. Then it was Dillinger's turn, and he went red as a tomato.
"Mind telling me what's going on?" Hollis asked Gunn.
Gunn took grim delight in rubbing it in.
"It seems you dropped us off at a very critical point, Colonel. We found almost 20 terrorists at the mine, along with a hidden helicopter they planned to use in clearing off the island. You didn't see fit to include us in your communications, so Pitt tried to warn you by sending a runaway train down the mountain into the fjord."
Dillinger nodded in understanding.
"The helicopter explains why the Arab hijackers deserted the ship and left the Mexicans to fend for themselves."
"And the train was their transportation to the mine," Gunn added.
Hollis asked, "Where are the others?"
"Last I saw of them before Pitt sent me to rescue his father and these people, they were under siege inside the crushing mill building."
"The 4 of you took on close to 40 terrorists? Dillinger asked incredulously.
"Pitt and the others kept the Arabs from escaping as well as creating a diversion so I could rescue the hostages."
"The odds were better than 10 to 1 against them," stated Hollis.
"They were doing a pretty good job of it when I left," answered Gunn solemnly.
Hollis and Dillinger stared at each other.
"We'd better see what we can find," said Hollis.
Senator Pitt came over.
"Colonel, Rudy has told me my son is up at the mine. I'd like to tag along with you."
"Sorry, Senator. I can't permit it until the area is secure."
Gunn put his arm around the old man's shoulder.
"I'll see to it, Senator. Don't worry about Dirk. He'll outlive us all."
"Thank you, Rudy. I appreciate your kindness."
Hollis was not so confident.
"They must have been wiped out," he muttered under his breath to Dillinger.
Dillinger nodded in agreement.
"Hopeless to think they could survive against a heavy force of trained terrorists."
Hollis gave the signal and his men began moving like phantoms through the mine buildings. As they neared the crushing mill, they began to find the litter of dead awesome. They counted 13 bodies crumpled in ragdoll positions on the road and ground outside.
The crushing mill building was riddled with hundreds of bullet holes and showed the splintered results of grenades. Not a single pane of glass was left intact anywhere. Every entry door had been blown into splinters. Hollis and five men cautiously entered through holes blown in the walls while Dillinger and his team approached from the shattered opening that was once the front main entrance. Small fires burned and smoldered everywhere, but had not yet joined to build a major conflagration. 2 dozen bodies were heaped about the floor, several stacked against the front of the ore crusher. The helicopter stood amazingly clean and pristine, with only its tail section in mangled condition. 3 men still lived among the carnage. 3 men who looked so smoke-blackened, so bloody, in such awful shape, that Hollis couldn't believe his eyes. 1 man was lying on the floor, his head resting in the lap of another, whose arm was held in a gore-stained sling. 1 stood swaying on his feet, blood streaming from wounds on 1 leg, the base of his neck where it met the shoulder, the top of his head, and the side of his face. Not until Hollis was only a few meters away did he recognize the battered men before him. He was absolutely stunned. He couldn't see how those 3 pitiful wrecks had kept the faith and won out over fearsome odds. The Special Operations Forces grouped around in silent admiration. Rudy Gunn smiled from ear to ear. Hollis and Dillinger stood there wordlessly. Then Pitt painfully straightened to his full height and said, "About time you showed up. We were running out of things to do."